My friends of Christ, again, it's wonderful to be with you this morning to celebrate the Eucharist. I feel your presence, even though I can't see you, and I feel a connection, and I hope you do feel a connection too, not only to this celebration, but to one another in this far-flung community of faith. As we move closer to the great Feast of Pentecost, now only two Sundays away, there is more and more talk in the readings about the Holy Spirit. And we should welcome that because sometimes the Holy Spirit gets short shrift. Today, in the reading from Acts, we got the story of Philip going to Samaria, that hotbed of heretics, or so the Jews consider them. Samaria, that difficult place where Jesus' apostles had not been welcome. But it's different now. When Philip preaches in Samaria and works wonders, driving out unclean spirits and healing paralyzed and crippled people, the Samaritans listen to him and they believe. And when word of this reaches headquarters in Jerusalem, the Jerusalem community responds by sending two of the apostles down to Samaria. They send Peter and John so that they can do what only the apostles can do, lay hands on the new believers for an outpouring of the gifts of the Holy Spirit. This laying on of hands for the imparting of the gifts of the Holy Spirit was very important in the early church. It's still important in the church. Luke, the author of Acts, tends to connect the outpouring of the Spirit's gifts to a physical laying on of hands by the apostles. The apostles, after all, who had witnessed Christ risen, who had eaten and drank with him, they were in a unique position to connect new believers to him and to his life-giving Spirit. But it's worth observing that in today's reading from John's Gospel, we got quite a different view about how people receive the gifts of the Holy Spirit. In that reading, Jesus says nothing at all about the role of apostles or about the laying on of hands. He speaks only of love. He says that love is what brings about the coming of the Spirit. If you love me, he says, you will keep my commandments, and I will ask the Father, and he will give you another advocate to be with you always, the Spirit of truth. In John's Gospel, love is the key to receiving the Holy Spirit. Love and the keeping of the commandments, the greatest of which, of course, is love. So what are we to make of this? Are Luke and John at odds with each other? No. They had different purposes in writing, and they were writing at different times, writing for different communities. Luke had his own good reasons for stressing the need for order and organization in the community, and John had his good reasons for stressing love. But order and love are not in opposition. They just need to be kept in balance, because we need both. Why do I make a point of this? Well, I think it's timely. Timely because this same tension is still very much present in our church today. For a long time, Luke's stress on the highly ordered, hierarchical church held sway, with the result that when speaking of the ways the Spirit works in the church, the tendency has always been to start with the hierarchical structure of the church and to see the church as something of a pyramid with the bishops and the priests at the top and everyone else at the bottom. Call it trickle-down theology, if you will. It has elements of truth, but it definitely has limits. But there's another way to look at all of this. To look at the whole church, lay people, priests, bishops, all together. This is the church of the Second Vatican Council, and it's the church of Pope Francis, who wants to awaken all of us to our call to be missionaries, the call we have received to live and to preach what he likes to call the gospel of joy. Pope Francis reminds us that Jesus was speaking to the whole church when he said, "If you love me, you will keep my commandments, and I will ask the Father, and he will give you another advocate to be with you always, the Spirit of truth. You know this Spirit because he remains with you and is in you." My friends, these two realities of the ordered, organized, hierarchical church and the missionary church, where everyone shares in the priestly calling, where everyone is graced with the gifts of the Holy Spirit, are both at work in the annual Catholic appeal, which I need to bring before you this morning. There, I said it. Did I cause whiplash when I did? I hope not. I need to remind you about the appeal to recommend it to you today, because in doing so, it's my hope that you will see it not as pouring money into an impersonal institution, but as one way for you to live out your role as part of the missionary priestly people of God. By supporting the annual Catholic appeal, you are doing a priestly thing, a missionary thing. You are helping to carry out the church's mission to worship, to teach, and to serve. You are also making it possible for the church to do things that parishes simply cannot do. Parishes can't, for instance, provide spiritual care to thousands of patients in the many, many hospitals across our region, across Western Washington. And parishes can't do the great programs for kids, summer camps, athletics, that CYO does. And parishes can't make available the amazing, and I do mean amazing, network of services provided by Catholic Community Services and Catholic Housing Services, the largest privately run social service agency in the state of Washington. And those are but a few of the great things that the annual Catholic appeal helps make possible. You know all this, and each year you are wonderfully supportive of the appeal. You make us the most generous of the 170-some parishes in the whole Archdiocese. But I am painfully aware, my friends, of how untimely the appeal is this year. To be honest, it's painful for me even to talk about it. And I would not, were it not for the fact that the great works you support in the annual appeal are needed now more than ever. We can't stop serving the poorest and the neediest among us. We can't. And we can't let our schools fail. And for that matter, we can't stop training and forming young men for the priesthood. All I would ask then, in this year that is like no other, is that those of you who are not out of work, those of you whose finances, while maybe compromised but still intact, I would ask that you step forward to support the appeal, and if possible, even to increase your gift this year to make up for those who simply cannot be in a position to give at all because they are out of work. We have a huge goal to meet, $371,000. And as always, we actually need to exceed that goal. That's because, as I'm sure you remember, everything given above and beyond that goal that is set for us by the Archdiocese comes back to our parish in the form of a rebate. This year, with our parish finances on near life support systems, as you can might well imagine, simply because of the pandemic, the rebate will help us to keep the parish going and to keep paying our wonderful staff who continue to work as hard as ever during these days. This past week, you should have received a letter from me about the annual appeal giving you more specific information. I hope you've taken a look at it, or if you haven't, that you will, and that you will give what you can. You can mail in your pledge in the envelope we provided, or of course you can go online and make your gift, your pledge there. It's on the Cathedral website. My friends, I have to tell you, this is about the hardest, if not the hardest, ask I have had to do in my memory. I do it because I believe in the cause. I really do. I believe in it deeply. And I also do it because I know that you are generous people. You always do what you can. You always step forward. You always embrace your call to be disciples, priestly people, missionaries on fire with the gifts of the Holy Spirit.